Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, filling in for Dr. Dobson today. As we look back on 2017, we are reminded of all the impactful things that God has done here at this ministry. From inspiring interviews to Dr. Dobson's timely monthly newsletters, we pray that God has touched you and your family this past year. All that we are doing would not be possible without your prayers and faithful financial support. As we wind down 2017, I'd like to remind you that at this time of the year, it's a perfect time for you to partner with us here at Family Talk, especially because now through the end of December, every dollar you donate will be doubled thanks to a generous matching grant. So if you give $5, it's like you're giving $10. If you give $25, it's like you're giving $50, and so on. You can visit our website at drjamesdobson.org and make your donation securely online. If you prefer, you can call us toll-free at 877-732-6825 and make your donation over the phone. Again, the toll-free number, 877-732-6825. Whether you're a longtime supporter of Dr. Dobson or you'll be contacting us for the first time, please know how much we appreciate your help as we continue to impact families for Christ. Now, on today's edition of Family Talk, we'll be discussing the topic of addiction and its effects. Unfortunately, millions of people across the country suffer with these dangerous compulsions, but one in particular has plagued our nation in recent years, and that is the widespread use and the fatalities associated with opioid addiction. This epidemic has forced the Surgeon General to classify it as an emergency public health crisis. Opioid abuse has taken the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in the past 20 years, and it's important for the public to know how to fight this problem and rescue those who have fallen victim to it. Today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, you're going to hear from an expert on this topic. His name is Dr. Michael Lyles. Dr. Lyles is a diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology and has his own clinical consulting practice in Georgia called Lyles and Crawford. Dr. Tim Clinton from Family Talk was able to catch up with Dr. Lyles to discuss this tough subject at the American Association of Christian Counselors World Conference in Nashville this past September. Here now is their conversation.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton talking today with Dr. Michael Lyles. He's an AACC executive board member, Christian psychiatrist, addiction expert. We're going to be talking about the national crisis of the opioid addiction, actually emergency status of that addiction in modern day society. Overdoses in America, drug overdoses in the United States likely exceeded 60,000 deaths in 2016. The death toll is a direct result of the growing public health crisis made more deadly by the rampant lax prescription methods and the influx of illicit drugs on the illegal market. We're talking about heroin, we're talking about fentanyl, we're talking about carfentanil and other drugs. Drug overdose is now the leading cause of death among Americans under, catch this, the age of 50. Let me repeat that, under the age of 50. Overdose deaths have risen 19% in 1 year, and the projections are only going to get worse. Dr. Lyles, thank you for joining us on this very troubling and challenging topic here on Family Talk.
It's a problem that started back in the 90s when people began to write prescription opioid medications, thinking that it wouldn't be a problem if people had real pain problems and wouldn't become addicted to them. But of course, that didn't work out well, and prescription rates for prescription opioids started to just dramatically go up from the 1990s up into the 2000s, with the overdose rates being very, very high. But the overdose rate got worse when people started leveling off prescriptions for prescription opiates, because people start to transition to heroin and fentanyl. And that's when the overdose has become a crisis, because these drugs are much more easier to overdose on. The annual death rate from prescription opioids, the ones you can get at the drugstore, has been stable from 2011 to 2015, but for heroin has tripled from 2011 to 2015.
Dr. Lyles, I want to bring this back to the everyday listener here on mm-hmm. Family Talk for a moment. In our close family situation, we have people who struggle with opioid drugs. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt in my mind, everyone listening, probably knows of someone fairly close
mm-hmm.
who's battling.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is so prevalent. It's so out of control. And can you help us understand, I guess, first of all, the classification or maybe some of the drugs that would fit in this category that we're talking about? Because there's a tendency when you talk about drug overdose that people are talking about somebody smoking marijuana or they're, you know, doing some other drug and they're druggy shooting needles. But when we're talking about this, we're talking about something that often is prescribed by a physician.
Right.
You're a psychiatrist.
Right.
You write prescriptions pretty much every day. Tell us what we're talking about in terms of drugs.
In terms of the types of drugs, we're talking about prescription pain pills. Examples would be oxycodone, hydrocodone. OxyContin would be a type of oxycodone preparation, hydrocodone, morphine, Demerol. These are all prescription medications that are used for...
Taken for pain.
For pain.
Maybe fibromyalgia or something, right?
Yeah, and one of the real underreported problems is that chronic pain is becoming a major issue in our society because of the aging of the population. There's far more people with chronic pain than people taking opioid medications. But when people start taking opioid medications for chronic pain, it can turn into a nightmare when they become addicted to them.
Now, the reason why they started prescribing these is because we hate seeing people in pain. We hate being in pain, right?
They used to call pain a vital sign that we were ignoring, just like blood pressure and pulse. Back in the 90s, it was considered to be one of the fifth vital signs.
So it was like a gift, though, to people who were, hurting. And
yes.
So here we have an opportunity, especially for people, say, who are going through horrific things like bouts with cancer or something else,
right.
And they need something, right?
Right.
And so here's this gift to medicine, and the prescription rates, though, have gone, like you were referencing earlier, just through the roof.
Yeah, but because of regulations on prescriptions, and the FDA actually made pain pill manufacturers cut back their manufacturing by 15% several years ago, prescriptions for pain medicines have actually leveled off. But the problem is that people have graduated from prescription pain medicines to buying stuff on the street.
So I was reading that if an individual receives a prescription for an opioid pain reliever, that the risk of developing an addiction will triple just by getting the prescription for them.
Well, the longer somebody takes an opioid medication, the greater the risk they're going to become addicted.
And why is it so addictive? I mean,
that's just the nature of prescription opioids. They are all addictive. They're all habit-forming. It's just a matter of time. And the more you take, the greater the risk. I remember reading one article that says the risk factors for addiction is if you have a previous history of addiction, kind of obvious, if you have a history of a mental disorder, makes you more at risk for becoming an addict. But at the end, it says everybody's at risk if they take these medicines because they're just addictive.
Yeah, and what do they do to the person? Does it put them in an altered brain state that makes them feel good, or is it just numbing the pain? What does it do?
All of the above. It does. What you want it to do is numb the pain. Some people do get a mood elevation or an alteration. That's why a lot of people with untreated psychiatric illness use pain pills to treat their emotional pain, not just their physical pain, because it can get a mood alteration. But usually once you start developing tolerance to it, what you get is fatigue, depression, constipation. You just lay around not wanting to do anything, kind of feeling in a daze.
Now, explain that tolerance piece a little bit more, too.
Tolerance is when you take a medicine over a period of time and it takes more of the medicine to give the same result. That's the problem. So it takes more and more of the drug to get the same benefit that you got at lower dosages.
So as I continue to take this medication, let's just say it's mood-altering for a moment, I get to a place where I've got to consume more and more of this medication to create that same desired effect.
Do you get the same pain relief or the same emotional relief as some people are seeking? It takes more and more to do it. And the problem is sometimes people take more and more and more to the point that they take enough to overdose on it.
The side effects for a moment. I wanted to highlight this too because I don't think people often understand, for example, if they're addicted, what's happening to them. There is some real concern out there about the real adverse effects mm-hmm. to a person's body, even life-threatening, when you get caught up in this kind of an addictive pattern with opioids.
Yeah. Are you talking about prescription medicines or the illicit ones?
Yeah, either.
Let's just stick with the prescription medicines because these medicines are designed for oral usage. But when you start using needles to inject, you bring into play all of the infectious diseases, hepatitis, transmission of HIV virus that's present there, the risk of endocarditis where you have infection of your heart valves.
And they don't have a life.
Don't have a life.
Can a person go to a place, too, when they take this medication that they're kind of just out of it, their speech is slurred, they struggle with sentence structure and things
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Almost like they're drunk.
Yes, absolutely, that's a possibility.
So let's transition to what if I have a family member where I suspect that this is starting to show up? Dr. Laws, what should happen? And I want to talk about the world of medicine here in a moment again, mm-hmm. and what's happening there to help bring control. But if you're listening out there and you've got a brother, a sister, mom, dad, someone close to you, and they're caught up in addiction, where do they begin? What do we do?
They should be getting their medicine from a doctor, which may not be the case. Because a lot of people
This is going on the streets.
A lot of people buying pain pills on the street.
And sometimes they're getting, 50 pills at a pop, and they're selling them.
And they're not necessarily getting the kind of pain medicine that you and I just talked about. We talked about prescription medicines you get at the drugstore. So the problem now is that a lot of the pills are being mixed with fentanyl, which is a very potent pain substance that's synthetic. And it's far more potent than the medicines you get at the drugstore. And people can overdose by accident taking something that they didn't even know they were taking. So if you have a relative, the first line of defense is to take someone to a doctor and get them evaluated. Because to get off drugs, they're going to have to get detoxified. Because you can't stop any of these medicines, prescription or street, cold turkey. Well, you can, but you'll get very, very sick. Depending on what you were taking, a lot of times people who are buying things on the street don't even know what they're taking. You could have a seizure, and it could be a life-threatening event. So safe detoxification is the first line just to get the person through withdrawal. People who are using a lot of opiates, be their prescription or street, talk about dope sickness, where they feel like they have to use pills not to even get a mood alteration anymore, but to avoid getting sick.
Wow.
Because after a while, you develop a tolerance to the mood alteration. It just becomes a matter of avoiding getting, quote, dope sick.
And Dr. Laws, we're talking about the opioid crisis in America, the emergency issue that's right before us. And we're not talking about people who are out there. We're talking about our family members, church goers, and more. This is everywhere. This is epidemic.
Yes.
It's reaching into everyday America.
Yes.
And as a result, what we're trying to alert people to is how serious this is if your loved one or someone you care about is caught up in this pattern and what to do about it right now. And you challenged us. It's hard, though, when somebody is caught up in this. They're so secretive, private, locked in their own world, don't want to hear it, living in denial, and getting that first step going.
Yeah, because a lot of times people think this isn't that big of a problem because they can get a prescription for it at their local pharmacy.
Doctor gave it to me,
so it can't be a problem. And that's one of the big problems with prescription drug abuse, is that people can write it off as this is just a medical problem. It's because I have a bad back. It's because I have arthritis or fibromyalgia. And the fact that they're taking far too much and that it's impairing their life is what they're not getting. They're not seeing the ways in which it is causing a negative impact in their lives. And that's where a family member or a family members always encourage groups of people to come together and do an intervention.
Doing an intervention.
Yeah, because if it's just one person talking to them, oh, you're just giving me a hassle because you don't like me.
Right.
You're just trying to control me. You don't know what you're talking about. But when
you don't know
five,
the level of pain I have.
But when it's five people who can say, this is what's different in your life as a result of this, and we want to see you get some help, it's harder to discount it.
Should they go to the person's doctor with them if they can?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just show up with them.
Yeah, because
and say, listen, we've got a problem. We think he or she's addicted.
And maybe
we're terrified for him.
Yeah, and maybe abusing what they're taking. Yes, because you can't depend on the person to go to the doctor and tell the doctor what they're having problems with, because they're going to be cutting off their supply of pain pills, and they're not going to do that because they're afraid of getting dope sick and having the pain come back.
Wow. And again, I want to stress the emergency side of this. There's an alert out there for a reason. People are dying.
Yeah, so many people are dying that coroner's offices are having trouble finding places to store the bodies. If you're in a big city and you die under suspicious circumstances like an overdose, by law, the coroner has to examine the body. You can't just go to the funeral home. And there may be enough coroners to do it, but in small towns, they use the state coroner's offices. And they don't have enough people to process the bodies. And they don't have any place to put the bodies. It's so bad.
And Dr. Laws, I want to compound this even a little bit more. When you get addicted, there isn't a body effect. You know, a lot of people think you should just be able to say no. You know, just stop. Please stop. Tim, quit it. And they don't understand that, and not that easily done.
You have to kind of ask the question of how people get into this and why they get into it. A lot of people with addictions start using in early teen years, about 8%, because of trauma in their lives. Victims of sexual abuse, victims of violence, family violence, domestic violence, divorce, parental incarceration, parental drug usage. And a lot of times kids are using drugs to treat their pain early, emotional pain, not physical pain. The other side of why people use is that a large proportion of people are using have untreated psychiatric problems and they're self-medicating. I think one study said that 16% of our population might have some sort of psychiatric problem, but they account for 50% of the prescriptions written for prescription opioids. And so, almost none of these people are in treatment for their psychiatric problems. I think around 40-50% are in treatment for their psychiatric problems. Maybe.
And what's interesting, there's an old country music line, and it simply goes like this: the more I drink, the more I drink. Mm-hmm. I can't stop. Mm-hmm. The more I drink, the more I drink. And so when they're caught up in this opioid addiction pattern, the more I take drugs to anesthetize the pain or maybe the emptiness in my soul, the more I have to take them.
Yeah. To get the same benefit. And the thing is, these are drugs that actually can change the biology of your brain. If you think about something, if you're trying to get stronger and you exercise, you're trying to get your muscles to change in response to the exercise because our body has, we call plasticity. Plasticity is a term used to describe the fact that your muscles can get bigger if you exercise them over and over and over. If you put that stress on it, the muscle will change to get bigger. Mm. The problem with opioids, be they prescription or street, is that they work on the dopamine system in the brain. And the dopamine system is your normal pleasure system. And it's cruising around doing about 35 miles an hour. And if you're hungry and eat something, it goes up to 60. If your favorite team wins a game, it may go up to 60. When you know, pleasurable things, it speeds up normally. With these drugs, it goes up to 100. And with repeated usage, your brain starts to think that this is normal and that 60 isn't normal anymore and 35 is an emergency. That's when you start to get craving and people start to lose their calibration of what's normal because of the changes that occur with plasticity in the brain with repeated exposure to drugs.
And you think about that effect on the brain, it's sobering.
Yeah.
Because this mind-altering substance can actually then impact the body at every level, right down to the DNA of our cells and more.
Yeah, how DNA is expressed. That's why they call it mood-altering or mind-altering. It's because it actually changes the hardwiring of your brain.
And not only the irreversible effects of this. I mean, obviously we talked about a lot of people dying, but there are different shades of a deterioration effect on the body and on that person.
Well, people talk about the disease of addiction. I know people, you know, get all up in arms about addiction being a disease, but what people are really talking about in medicine is that there's some people that are wired to be at risk for this more than other people. They'll use drugs just a little bit and all of a sudden have a major problem, whereas someone else could have used them for a long period of time without developing a problem. Not everybody with chronic pain ends up with a substance use disorder. So it's something different about some people that puts them more at risk for their brains reacting to these drugs the way they do in such a negative way.
Dr. Laws, I know we're fighting for time here for a moment, and to me it's fascinating. I love this subject because I think it's so significant to every one of us. I want you to talk to us about the tendency for us just to stick our head in the sand, ignore, think it's going to go away, that something will change, and it never does.
That what's going to go away? These are not
that some of them are magically going to quit or they're going to be okay or maybe they don't really have a problem, but we know they do have a problem, but we just don't want to face it. You hear what I'm saying? So we're living in that world, and the church often doesn't address much of this.
Oh, no. It's dirty work dealing with this. The Surgeon General describes addiction as a chronic disease, that people who end up in the shape that we're talking about have a chronic disease that it takes time for them to get over. It's not go get detox and you're good to go after a week. These people are going to require care for months and years to get their lives back in order again, because it's not just a matter of using drugs. They have to learn how to live again. In a report I read, the chief executive officer of a rehab facility said, we can get people sober, but after they leave our hospital, where do they go? What would be nice is if they could go to churches that help them learn how to live again, how to have fun sober, how to develop relationships sober, how to get their self-esteem and self-dignity back. Because that's why people relapse, is they don't do that. Somebody said getting sober is like getting the first base in baseball. It just qualifies you to do the rest of the work to score. And a lot of people get to first base, can turn around and go back to home plate over and over again.
Some people think, Dr. Lyles, that Christian psychiatry don't go together. But I know you. I know your deep love for the Lord. Can you kind of close us out here on a note about Christ to you and the role of medication in the life of a Christian and more? Because people often struggle with that anyway. You hear what I'm saying? It's value and maybe some of the advances that we're seeing, but we have to be careful and judicious.
That's a closing
here.
Question? That's a whole program.
That is a whole program. It really is. But, I mean, I want to bring it into this one because we'd be remiss if we didn't just talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. What gets people in trouble, to be brief, is that people think that the brain is a different organ from the rest of the body, and that the brain can't get sick like the rest of the body and have behavioral symptoms like the rest of the body. And that's just not true. The brain can become diabetic or insulin resistant at the least. We know that. The brain can develop inflammation. The brain is affected by every other organ in the body. So people think of the human body like a grocery store, that you got the produce over here and the meat over here and the vegetables over here, and you can go buy some corn and it doesn't do anything to the meat department and the milk department, but the body isn't like that. When you have an effect in one part of the body, it affects those other departments. So you buy some chicken and all of a sudden you don't have as much milk. That's how the human body works. And when brain diseases happen, some of the treatments require medical things to reverse it and get it back to normal. And that's where medications come in. Some people think medications would separate somebody from God or get in the way of the work of the Holy Spirit in their life. But medicines don't do that. I've been a psychiatrist 34 years. Case in point, you can take an antidepressant and you're not sad anymore, but you're not happy. Right. You might not be anxious, but you don't have peace. You might not be irritable, but that doesn't mean you can get along with anybody or have patience. It's a big difference between what medicines do and, for the sake of discussion, the fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah. And as a result, we would agree that there are people out there who are over-medicated, and there are a lot of people out there who are under-medicated.
Right.
So it's really bringing balance and making sure that you do the work necessary to monitor a person on that journey. You don't just throw them on a drug.
And walk away.
Yeah, and walk away. That's not treatment.
Yeah.
But stepping into the life, and like you said, medicine can make a big difference, but it can't give you hope.
The medicines we use for people with addictions to try to get people off pain pills or to get people to stop craving and using pain pills, it just gets them to first base. It doesn't treat anything. It controls all the physical problems that drugs of abuse have caused. That's when the church is needed the most, because it's when people are getting out of that lifestyle, the dope life I call it, and trying to figure out how to put their lives back together again. In the medical world, we call it recovery. In the church world, they call it discipleship. Newsflash, they're the same.
Dr. Lyles, I'll tell you what, we got some content in here. We could certainly bring you back and have a little spirited program together. You hear what I'm saying? That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we've got to be having these conversations. Thanks for joining us here on Family Talk. I know Dr. Dobson would be thrilled to join you in studio too. And to all those who are out there listening, thanks for joining us here. Dr. Dobson sends his regard. We love being a part of your life.
This is Roger Marsh filling in for Dr. James Dobson today here on Family Talk. We've been listening to Dr. Tim Clinton from our Family Talk team talking with psychiatrist Dr. Michael Lyles about the seriousness of the opioid crisis here in America. If this program convicted you or made you realize that maybe someone you know may be struggling with opioid abuse, we urge you to call the American Association of Christian Counselors toll-free at 1-800-526-8673. You'll be connected there with a counselor who can help you through this tough issue. Again, the number to call is 800-526-8673. You can also go online to aacc.net to find a counselor near you or to receive useful information on how to fight back against the stronghold of addiction. Again, that website address is aacc.net. We appreciate your prayers and constant support of our ministry as we continue to fight for the institution of the family. Make sure you're with us again tomorrow. We have an exclusive talk given by President Trump's former chief advisor, Steve Bannon. He addressed Family Talk's annual gathering event last month and gave a powerful and moving speech about the future of our nation. You won't want to miss that broadcast coming up next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.